Ontario's Current Affairs Program Studio 2 and Diplomatic Immunity, and was the moderator for the English Language Leaders Debate this past Monday. By the way, his most recent book, biography of John Robarts, Public Triumph, Private Tragedy, is still available from Penguin. I'm pleased to welcome once again to the commentary.ca Steve Pakin. Good morning, Mr. Pakin.
Hi, Joe. How are you this morning?
Very well, thanks.
Good.
About the leaders' debate, how does one get chosen to be the moderator of that, and is that something you applied for? Or?
I really don't know the answer to that question. I'll tell you how it came about. I got a call from Keith Bogue of CBC, I guess about 5 or 6 weeks ago, and he said, I'm going into a meeting tomorrow with all the broadcasters and all the political parties, and I'm taking in with me to that meeting lots of names of possible moderators, and I wondered if I could put your name on the list. And I said, by all means, and I'm very flattered that you would think of doing so, and that's great. And he said, I'll call you back tomorrow and let you know how it all works out. And I figured that would be the last I would hear of all this. Could not, frankly, have imagined that they would have picked me. He called me back a day later, and he said, okay, here's what we've decided. Trina McQueen is going to do the first debate in Vancouver, and you're going to do the second debate in Montreal, and I'll call you back later with more details. And I'm afraid you can't print what my response was to him, because I think even on the Internet there's probably rules about this kind of thing. I was shocked, to say the least.
Now, the consortium, we heard a lot about the consortium, and it sounds evil and it sounds mafia-like. That are the major television networks, are they not?
Yeah, CBC, CTV, and Global Television were part of the consortium for the English debate, and then, of course, Radio-Canada and TVA for the French debate.
It's different from the American model, where the parties themselves, the Republicans and the Democrats, control the debate commission or something like that?
I guess that's right. I'm not too familiar with the American situation, but from what I understand of it, the broadcasters themselves don't do it. There's a sort of a quasi-independent, but you're right, it's not really that independent, because the only candidates who ever take place are Republicans and Democrats. But it's a quasi-independent body that does all the negotiating and figures it all out. And, you know, we've seen their format change numerous times over the years, and I guess our format up here has changed as well. All to the good, if you ask me. I know that at the last leaders' debate in 2004 for that election campaign, you know, I found it very unsatisfying. They were all out there screaming at each other all at the same time. It was impossible to hear anybody speak, and I guess I can appreciate as much as the next guy a good, vigorous interchange of views, but that seemed not particularly useful. So I think they wanted to find a new format this time that would correct that, which I think they did.
And they didn't have journalists this time around. Was that better, do you think? Well, I guess for you it was pretty good, but...
Yeah, certainly I preferred it. You know, the moderator's role is not a terribly significant role if all you're doing is sort of introducing three different journalists to ask all the questions. So the thing I liked best about the debate, I guess, was I think it sort of combined the best of both worlds of what you want. You want to be able to hear what the leaders have to say, so the format did provide for them to have a chance to speak uninterrupted, and it provided the moderator a certain amount of flexibility and leeway to do follow-ups, you know, unscripted, just depending on what I heard emerging from the debate, and allowed some interchange of the candidates at that point. And I thought that worked reasonably well. You know, I don't know if there's a perfect system out there, but this one was certainly a lot better than the last one.
Did you think that Canadians got a good sense of whom they're voting for after these debates? And I ask that also in light of the Green Party being excluded, because he's suing the consortium, isn't he not?
I believe he is, yes.
So do you think that Canadians got a good sense of what they're voting for on the 23rd?
I really don't know how to answer that question, only because I still haven't figured out in my mind whether debates, A, change people's minds, or B, just reconfirm the ideas they already had coming into them. You know, if there's not a knockout punch, which happens so rarely on these things, you know, you think of Brian Mulroney on John Turner in 1984, you know, that happens, that's once in a lifetime that happens. And I think at most of these debates, the best you can hope for is a good, vigorous exchange of ideas, allowing the leaders to tell people where they stand on various issues and seeing how they sort of think on their feet. And, you know, obviously, I think it was particularly important in this campaign because much of the campaign took place during what we traditionally think of as holiday time, and you don't know how, you know, how much Canadians were actually able to know, you know, about their platforms before that. So I thought it was very useful for them to be able to have opportunities in the debate to express their positions on issues uninterrupted, while at the same time have a chance to mix it up a bit.
This debate obviously meant a little bit more because it was closer to the election date and it was after the holidays.
Mm-hmm.
There was a great deal of pressure on you. You were nervous, I guess, were you?
Understatement of the century. And I know we're only 6 years into this century, but still, I've never been more nervous in anything I've ever done in journalism. It was, well, I'll tell you, Mark Balgutch, who was the CBC producer, who was in the control room and in my ear during the course of the debate, said to me before the debate started, a few hours before, he said, look, you know how the best hockey games are the ones where you pick up the paper the next day and it doesn't say anything about the referee,
right,
and you leave the arena that night and you don't know who the ref was? And I said, I get you, Mark. That's what we're going for here. I know. And yes, there, I felt an enormous amount of pressure to make sure that after the debate was over, people would only focus on what the leaders had to say, and no one would be able to say, this guy clearly favored one side over the other, or boy, did he screw that up. You know, I did make some mistakes during the debate. It was the first time I'd ever done one, so that, I think, was inevitable. But I was extremely pleased to see that in all the coverage the next day, I didn't see anything that suggested that I'd really botched it up too badly.
A lot of things that I read, both on the left and the right, bloggers on the left and the right, said that you did do a good job. I know Kinsella made fun of you looking like a Q-tip. But
I like that website, incidentally. I read him a lot.
Yeah.
He's good.
Everyone was grading the leaders and how they acquitted themselves. When you're in the room with them and you're listening to them answer your questions, you're listening to them debate, do you get a sense that he did very well or he did very badly, or are you really concentrating on your job?
Yeah, you don't get any sense of that at all, actually, and I'll tell you why. I'm trying to do four things at once in there. I have to have an eye on the clock to make sure they don't go over. I have to have an eye on my candidate sheet so that I know in which order they're supposed to speak, so I know who to go to next. I have to have an eye on my question sheet so I know what question we're at and where we're going to next. And I also have to be listening to their answers in case there's anything I want to follow up on during my sort of moderator's prerogative to follow up round. If you're trying to do, and of course, not to mention listen to the control room in case they have any advice for me while we're going along, the notion of trying to do all five of those things at once and keep a scorecard to see who's doing well, just not possible. So I think actually people watching it at home on television would have had a much better sense after the debate was over than I would have as to who bested whom, if anybody.
We're talking with Steve Pakin from TV Ontario. He moderated last Monday's English language debate between the federal political leaders and Gilles Duceppe. Have you watched the debate yourself?
Yes, I have.
What were your thoughts about how you did and how the leaders did? You thought that the format worked well, right?
That's the first thing I was really looking for, I must tell you. I was less concerned about how the leaders did and how, you know, how I handled it, and I was really concerned about whether the format was going to work, because you got to remember, after the last campaign last year, 2 years ago, 2004, a year and a half ago, everybody was so unhappy with the format that they really tried hard to think of something better. And after the first debate in Vancouver, in which I thought Trina McQueen did a very fine job trying to keep it all together with new rules, which the candidates themselves, I must tell you, were not completely sure of, because even before this second debate, I was still getting questions from the leader saying, now remind me, what am I allowed to do, what am I not allowed to do? So given all of that, you know, that we're dealing with new rules here, it was a little tricky. But I know one of the things that emerged from that first debate was that people complained to me that there wasn't enough interchange among the candidates, which I must say is difficult to do given that there's a specific order within which they have to talk, you know, that it's not just a free-for-all. So the thing that I was watching first and foremost when I was watching it on television again after it was over was whether or not there actually was a decent back and forth of ideas. And I think in the main it worked. You know, the first question out of the gate They all had to answer in a specific order. But after that, in the follow-up round, again they had to answer in a specific order, but I could go back at them again, and at that point I could let two guys go after each other if they wanted to. And that, in fact, did happen once. It felt in the studio, anyway, rather dramatically, late in the debate when Mr. Duceppe and Mr. Martin had a discussion about Quebec's place in Canada. That, to me, seemed to be the most dramatic moment in the debate as I was watching it afterwards.
What was the feeling like in the room when you started, before you went on the air, in terms of body language? Did they talk to each other? Do you get a sense that they like each other?
No, you don't get that sense. I'll tell you what happened. It's because having never done one of these before, I never knew any of this, but at a quarter to eight, so 15 minutes before the debate was supposed to start, they bring all the leaders in for a very quick photo op. 2 minutes, you know, they do the handshakes. Remember, they've done this. I think this was their fifth debate together because they'd done, English and French in Vancouver. They'd done two debates, English and French, in the 2004 campaign. Yeah, so this was their fifth time together. So, you know, they get the, they get the showbiz aspect of it, the fact they have to go out there and shake hands and do the photo op. But then they go back to their holding areas until about 2 minutes to eight. And at 2 minutes to eight, they bring them in. And I'm telling you, Joe, that was the tensest 2 minutes I've ever been associated with. Wow. I mean, they're standing there at their lecterns. They're not looking at each other. They are reviewing their notes. It is like tense, tense, tense. All of them know that, you know, they're probably the... You know, Mr. Martin knows the future of his government depends on doing well. Mr. Harper knows that one mistake and maybe the possibility of his becoming prime minister doesn't happen. Mr. Layton knows that if he wants to play a meaningful role in the next parliament, he's got to be terrific. I think Mr. Duceppe obviously had a lot less at stake than the other three, but just the tension in the room was just like the cliche said, you could really cut it with a knife. And I think with about a minute or 40 seconds to air, I looked up at them, and I just saw that this appallingly tense mood was in the room, and I just looked and said, I don't know what you guys are tense for. You've all done this before. I've never done this before. You got any advice for me? And I saw a few smiles cracked, which I think helped a little bit anyway. But I'll tell you, I have newfound respect for any leader who has to go through this, because unless you're in that room, you cannot appreciate how hard it is to have to be fast on your feet, sharp, smart, listen to what your opponent's saying, think of a good comeback, be able to discuss a wide range of issues reasonably intelligently, and bring it to time. You know, you've got to do it in 30 or 60 seconds. Let me tell you, that's hard to do.
Did you talk to any of the previous moderators, like Anne Medina, Trina McQueen, before you undertook this?
I did talk to Trina. Did I talk to Trina? No, Trina McQueen and I emailed back and forth. Yeah, and I'm... Yeah, I think that's, but I watched previous debates, and I have, while I haven't done this with national leaders during a national election campaign with 3 million people watching, I have done this kind of thing before for, provincial elections or for municipal elections, so, I had some sense about what the job required, but it's just that this is really quite a big stage.
Did you get any special advice from anybody in particular that was useful for you?
I sure did, actually. Fraser Kelly used to be the anchor of the 6 o'clock news on CBC when I worked there. And he has been kind of my hero in journalism. And he called me before the debate, and he said, and he moderated probably the most famous debate in Ontario political history, which was 1975 between Premier Bill Davis, Liberal leader Robert Nixon, and NDP leader Stephen Lewis. And it was probably the best remembered debate because it was just, it got very vicious at one point. And Nixon and Davis were going at it hammer and tong, and Mr. Davis at one point in the debate looked over at Fraser Kelly and got his name, accidentally botched up his name because he was in the middle of this tirade from Nixon. And he said, Mr. Fraser, do you intend to do anything about this? And it was, I remember, I was 15 at the time when it happened. I still remember it today. And Fraser Kelly said to me, you know, in every debate there's usually one magic moment. And when it happens, just make sure you let it happen. And you'll know when it happens, and use your judgment. Remember that while you're out there, while there are obviously rules, rules that have to be followed and so on. At the end of the day, your job is not to satisfy so much the leaders, but the citizens who are watching it. And you have to make sure that they have an opportunity to learn as much about these candidates as is possible over the course of the 2 hours. And I found that to be very, very helpful advice. And in fact, I was actually thinking of that during that Martin Duceppe contretemps, wondering, you know, should I get in here and cut this off or let it run a little? And I remembered what Fraser Kelly said, and I just let it run a little.
You spoke earlier about the leaders realizing that politically this was whatever happened that night would affect them politically, whether they win or lose or remain in politics after the 23rd. Did you get a sense that you were making history there that night?
I didn't get any sense that I was making history, absolutely not. I certainly got the sense, though, that they were, and that my obligation was to make sure that I didn't mess up my job so as to adversely affect their ability to make history. That's all that was going through my mind.
How do you come down from such a tense experience?
As quickly as possible. I cannot tell you that when 10 o'clock came, how good it felt just to know that it was over and that, you know, my assumption was that it had gone reasonably well. So I was very glad to have done it, but I was very glad when it was over.
Would you do it again?
You know, I would do it again, of course, but, you know, experience tells you that you don't get a chance to do these again. These are pretty much once-in-a-lifetime opportunities. Think back on previous leaders' debates, and I think they've all been... I can't think of anybody who got to do one more than once, so if this was my shot at it, I'm grateful to have done it and grateful that it worked out okay.
And I guess this is the most important question. Who decided what you wore?
That's the most important question, yeah. I decided, and I think there's actually a funny story about this. Obviously, in a debate like this, you do not want to be wearing a red tie, a blue tie, an orange tie, because you want to look. You not only want to be neutral, but you want to even look neutral. So I pulled out a purple tie, which I thought would be pretty safe. I got an email the next day from somebody who said, a very lengthy email. I mean, he went on and on and on about it. He said, you know, shame on you for wearing a blue tie. Don't you know that blue is a color of the Conservative Party? And, you know, aren't you ashamed of yourself for so blatantly showing your bias in this thing? Anyway, it went on like this and on and on. And I had to email the guy back, and I said, thanks for your note, but you need a new TV. My tie was purple. And he very generously emailed me back and said, whoops, I guess my problem is with Sony and not with you. Sorry about that.
Okay, well, Steve, thanks so much for joining us today, and compliments again on a very fine job on Monday. It made watching it all the more fun, for me at least.
Appreciate that, Joseph. Thanks a lot.
Steve Pinkin from TV Ontario Studio 2 and Diplomatic Immunity. Read his book, the recent one, The Public Triumph, Private Tragedy, the biography of John Roberts. It's very interesting. And then pick up the other two, The Life and The Dark Side. For thecommentary.ca, I'm Joseph Plenum.